Preliminary results from Sweden's parliamentary election found one of Europe's more liberal nations taking a decided turn to the right. Prime Minister Stefan Löfven warned voters not to let that happen.
But a decent democracy and social democrats and the social democratic-led government is a guarantee for not letting the Sweden Democrats, extremist party, a racist party, get any influence in the government.
The anti-immigration Sweden Democrats, which wants the country to leave the European Union and put a freeze on immigration, appeared poised to become the third largest party in parliament. Benoy Kebmark is a scholar at Australia's RMIT University.
A lot of this was a build-up that was taking place over the last few years with the rise, of course, of anti-immigration sentiment in Sweden. In 2015, when something like 163,000 individuals, asylum seekers and refugees were accepted into Sweden, the rise in numbers, the spike of arrivals started to prompt questioning about whether Sweden, you know, with its immaculate social welfare state, with its particular style of living, could actually cope with these new arrivals.
With most ballots counted, the ruling center-left Social Democrats had 28% of the vote, trailed by the moderates with 19%, and the Sweden Democrats with almost 18%. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has dissolved his government, named a new prime minister as the government struggles to cope with the deteriorating economic conditions. Mutaz Musa is the country's new prime minister, replacing Bakri Hassan Saleh, appointed in 2017. The number of ministries is also being cut from 31 to 21. The country is grappling with high inflation and a hard currency shortage as the country struggles with South Sudan breaking away. This is VOA News. North Korea staged a military parade on Sunday, marking the 70th anniversary of its founding. This woman was among the tens of thousands who turned out to watch the parade.
"I believe our people will always win. After watching the military parade, I've got a strong belief that we will be forever victorious."
Columns of marching soldiers, tanks, and other conventional weaponry were on display, but there was no sign of nuclear missiles. Joshua Pollack, a senior research associate at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies, said all types of such missiles were absent.
"It wasn't just long-range missiles that were absent. It was nuclear-capable missiles of any range, no short-range, medium-range, intermediate, or intercontinental."
President Trump tweeted a thank you to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, indicating leaving out the missiles was a big and very positive statement, he said, for North Korea. The parade focused on economic development and reunification with South Korea. The Islamic State claiming responsibility for a suicide attack near a procession in Kabul commemorating the death of a former anti-Soviet Mujahideen commander. At least 7 people are dead, more than 24 wounded. Also, nearly 30 Afghan security forces members were killed in separate attacks that happened Saturday west and north of the capital, Kabul. In Syria, Russian and Syrian warplanes struck at rebel targets in both Idlib and Hama provinces. According to rescuers and residents, barrel bombs filled with explosives and shrapnel were dropped on villages and hamlets in southern Idlib. In Washington, Vice President Mike Pence, appearing on Fox News Sunday, had a warning for both Damascus and Moscow.
"We all know what happened in Aleppo. We're watching it all very closely. But what's different with President Trump from President Obama is this president drew a red line and enforced it on chemical weapons. President Obama drew a red line, said, no, you can't use chemical weapons, and then allowed Assad in Syria to go forward and victimize countless civilians."
Pence also said the U.S. is watching with conventional buildup as well as to ensure another humanitarian catastrophe does not occur. Another Palestinian was shot and killed by Israeli troops as he tried to damage the Gaza border fence. Nearly 130 Palestinians have died along that border since sporadic protests began in March. The leader of Cambodia's main opposition party, Kem Sokha, was released from jail today, a year after being charged with treason, his party also disbanding, leaving the ruling party of Prime Minister Hun Sen to win the parliamentary seats.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today's Monday, September 10th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. At least 19 people died Sunday in a plane crash in South Sudan.
I do not want to assume, but there is no report of a plane being shut down because the area in which the plane crashed is an area that has never had any rebels that would be capable of bringing down an airplane.
Atain Wekatain, spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir, will have a debate on whether Liberia should have a war crimes court. Zimbabwe's opposition MDC says it plans to swear in Nelson Chamisa as the legitimate president of the country. But the ruling ZANU-PF says such action is treason. And Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni criticizes foreign interference in his country.
It is important that external players refrain from interfering in the internal affairs of other countries. Interfering in the internal affairs of other countries is morally and practically wrong.
And the Honorable Member of Parliament, Bobby Wine, will join us live this morning. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. At least 19 people died Sunday in a plane crash in South Sudan. Four people survived. The regional information minister for the Eastern Lake State, Taban Abel Agua, said the plane crashed in the central town of Urel as it came in to land. It was carrying 23 people. Atain Wek Atain is the spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He confirmed to VOA that among the dead were Simon Adult, the Anglican bishop of Urel, a lieutenant colonel in the South Sudan Army, and an Ethiopian businessman.
According to the information we obtained from the authorities, the plane that was hired by Baby Air, which is belonging to Southwest, was traveling to Europe, carrying 21 passengers, including the crew, a pilot, and co-pilot. And the plane approached Yerul. It crashed into the lake, killing 20 people, including the crew, and only three passengers survived. That's one child, one adult, and a doctor, one Italian.
Do you know of any prominent South Sudanese? I mean, every death, every human being is important. I just wanted to know if you know of any prominent South Sudanese.
There was a priest that was reported dead and one lieutenant colonel in the army, the SPLA, plus four nationals, that's including the pilot and co-pilot, and also an Ethiopian businessman who is contracted to construct a road between Mapodit and Rakrak. So these are the details of the death.
The story here is that the Anglican Bishop of Yerol, Simon Adult, was also among the dead. Is that true?
Yeah, that has been confirmed, yes. One of the prominent South Sudanese is actually a bishop of Anglican Church. Yeah, he's also feared dead among the 20.
What does your government know about the possibility that this plane might have been overloaded?
Well, according to Eastern Lake State Authority, they say the manifest could only show 18 passengers. But later on rescuing and recovering bodies, they discovered that the total of those on the plane were 23 until this afternoon. And then close to the evening, another body was found, which took the death toll to 20. That means with three people surviving, the plane was carrying 23.
Who is going to investigate this crash? Your government?
Well, I think this one is a prerogative of the Civil Aviation Department. They will be actually establishing the reason for the crash.
Your government is fighting a civil war with the rebels. Is there an indication that perhaps this was due to bad weather or maybe whether this plane was shut down?
Well, I do not want to assume, but there is no report of a plane being shut down because the area in which the plane crashed is an area that has never had any rebels that would be capable of bringing down an airplane. So there's no any foul play on this.
Atain Wek Atain is a spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni says his government will deal with the current political crisis in his country. In a televised address to the nation on Sunday, President Museveni lashed out at the international community for meddling in the affairs of Uganda. He refused to address the alleged torture of parliamentarians Robert Chakulayi, popularly known as Bobby Wine, and his colleague Francis Zaki, saying doing so could jeopardize the ongoing court proceedings. Mugumi Davis Brackeridge reports from Kampala.
In his televised national address, President Museveni focused mainly on economy, security and media. As has been the case in many of his speeches, the president spent most of the time praising his government for the economic progress he said his government has brought about. For example, he says Uganda's GDP, which was $3.4 billion in 1986, is now $88.6 billion US dollars. In what looks like a response to US lawyer Robert Amsterdam, who last week accused President Museveni of dictatorial tendencies and asked the US government to stop funding the Ugandan army, President Museveni said only Ugandans themselves will resolve their issues.
It is important that external players refrain from interfering in the internal affairs of other countries. Interfering in the internal affairs of other countries is morally and practically wrong. Morally wrong because the question is, what superior intelligence do you have to think that you can understand the problem in my house better than we, the Ochpans? If there is a problem in our house, we, the Ochpans, will solve it. Keep out. It is also practically wrong because outsiders cannot have enough information about a foreign situation. They are most likely to make mistakes.
President Museveni said the justice system will determine whether MPs Chagulanyi and Zake, now seeking treatment outside Uganda, were tortured by security officers.
There has been so much talk about the torture by the security forces of people like Honorables Bobi Wine and Zake. This talk is in the media, in other non-court fora. Yet, these are matters in the courts of law. The questions in the minds of those who love fairness are the following. What if those allegations turn out to be false? How will the accusers, local and foreign, rectify the injustice they have done to the security forces?
President Museveni also accuses both local and international media of biased reporting. The president said his government will, in two quotes, bring discipline and balance in media.
TVs, radios, newspapers, social media. These, most of the time, report in a tendentious and mendacious manner. There's that NBS television of a boy called Kalisa, MTV, that paper of Aga Khan, Okot Ogbomu's radio in Lira, or even CNN, that the NRM is useless.
The president did not elaborate how his government will control the media. Some journalists in Uganda have been beaten, threatened, or harassed by security personnel in the recent days. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Chagulanyi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, says he's getting better each day. He is in the United States for specialized medical treatment after he says he was beaten and tortured by Uganda security personnel. He has reiterated that he plans to return to Uganda as soon as he is well again. Bobi Wine says while he is concerned the Ugandan government might come after him again, he said if it did so, the government will be showing its inconsistency when it comes to respect for human rights. The Honorable Bobi Wine joins us now from Washington. Thank you very much. First of all, welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much. I hope everybody is all right there.
We hope you are okay.
I'm alive. I'm getting better.
So, as I was saying, President Yoweri Museveni spoke to the nation on Sunday, criticizing foreign interference in Uganda's internal affairs. Apparently, a reference to your U.S. lawyer's call for a halt to U.S. military assistance to Uganda. Any comment?
The United States, like all other development partners, has been a good partner to us in terms of the fight against HIV/AIDS, in terms of education, and indeed in terms of security, home and abroad. So, in my opinion, it is shameful for our government to criticize development partners when they talk about human rights, but never to criticize them when they stand with us in our desire to develop ourselves as a country.
Honorable, you are charged with treason for possessing arms and ammunition. First of all, did you?
Of course, it was a lie, because the charges of unlawful possession of firearms was dropped against me by the government. I mean, that was exposing them even further. But I am innocent, and all these are political allegations.
You have indicated you plan to return to Uganda as soon as you are well again. But the government said you and the Honorable Francis Zaake left Uganda without government approval. Are you not concerned that the government may stop you from returning to Uganda?
Of course, I'm concerned that the government will disturb me, but this is not going to be the first time. Everything the government of Uganda does to me or to any other Ugandans, it continues to expose itself and its inconsistency in regard to respect to human rights.
Your trial was moved from the military court to a civilian court. What do you make of that, and do you have confidence in the Ugandan judicial system?
First and foremost, I would like to thank the world for standing with Uganda. I believe that my removal from the military court to the civilian court was out of so much pressure from my friends and the lovers of freedom and liberty in Uganda and beyond Uganda. So I request them to keep asserting the pressure whenever and wherever there's an injustice. About the judiciary system in Uganda, just like any other government institution, they are all suppressed by the army, and there's literally very limited, if any, independence of the judiciary. But like I said, we will fight for our freedom, we will achieve our freedom, or we'll die trying. So I'm going to Uganda to continue the struggle for liberty and dignity.
Honorable, we do appreciate very much having you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much for taking your time to talk with us, given your situation.
Thank you, Daybreak Africa, and God bless you.
That's Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Kyagulanyi, popularly known as Bobby Wine. He was speaking with us live from Washington, D.C. Honorable Bobby Wine will be the guest on this week's Straight Talk Africa with host Shaka Sali. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Monday, September 10th. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. As the drumbeat gets louder for the establishment of a war and economic crimes court in Liberia, the Speaker of the House of Representatives is invoking adherence to Liberia's past international agreements. Civil society groups have presented a petition to the Liberian legislature calling for the court to be set up to try people who might have committed crimes during Liberia's civil war. But Speaker Bofill Chambers says Liberia should adhere to the 2003 Accra Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which he says calls for restorative rather than retributive justice in Liberia.
The whole issue of the War Crimes Court should be contextually historicized. We have traveled on the journey from Accra, and out of the discussion in Accra that, you know, came owing to the bloody civil war we had in Liberia, the arrangement was that there should be peace and reconciliation in Liberia. There should be restorative justice versus retributive justice. And we who go to conventions, international discussions when there are treaties, it's only fair to work out those details, and those details must be followed to the letter. So we are saying that we participated, meaning the country Liberia participated, and the decision was that there be peace and reconciliation. So if you say the truth, then reconciliation will come. If you say the truth, then you have, that restorative justice. So Liberia being a player, Liberia must abide by the rules.
Abiding by the rules means what? That Liberia should forego the whole idea of setting up a war crimes court because that was not the agreement. Is that correct?
That was not the agreement. But again, it's justice in itself. Justice has two approaches. One is retributive, one is restorative. And Liberians subscribe to the restorative aspect of justice.
Mr. Speaker, is Liberia under any pressure from outside to make sure that a war crimes court is set up?
Well, no. I have been here and I have been having colleagues from all parts of the world. I have been interacting with people from ECOWAS, from AU, from UN, even from friendly embassies. There has not been a scintilla of anybody wanting to have war crimes court set up in Liberia. The discussion has not come up. More than that, the Liberian people are the people who should perhaps set their agenda. If they want the clock, to be turned back, it will be their decision. But obviously, we are only reminding our compatriots that when we are in an arrangement, what we agree upon must be followed.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for taking your time to speak with me. I do appreciate very much.
Thank you so much, and God bless.
The Honorable Beaufort Chambers is the Speaker of Liberia's House of Representatives. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The former chair of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, known as the TRC, says there is heightened international and local awareness for setting up a war crimes court in Liberia to bring about justice. Councillor Jerome Verdier says in addition to international arrests already made, there will soon be more indictments issued for other alleged perpetrators. He says there is no provision in the act launching the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that exclusively calls for restorative justice as opposed to both restorative and retributive justice.
There is basically nothing to clarify. It just indicates that the Speaker did not understand the provisions of the Accra Peace Agreement, and I believe he hasn't read the TRC Act. The TRC Act domesticated the provisions of the Accra Peace Agreement. And there is no provision in there that calls exclusively for restorative justice. And what he doesn't understand also is that restorative justice is not a process mutually exclusive from the criminal justice process. It is a component or an offshoot of the criminal justice process. So the Speaker is mistaken, or he's intentionally trying to embellish impunity for what he calls restorative justice.
So, Mr. Chairman, is there any progress being made? And what does the arrest in France just recently do for this whole movement towards bringing people to justice in Liberia?
There is heightened awareness about the need for justice in Liberia. And besides the arrest in France, there will be indictments issued pretty soon for other perpetrators, including some of those in Liberia. We are working on those efforts to ensure that action can be taken before the court is established.
When we talk about war crimes in Liberia, I mean, who are the likely individuals that might be, say, implicated? I read the other day, or maybe I listened to an audio of Senator Prince Johnson, let me say, issuing kind of a threat. Is he one of those people that might be implicated, say, in this?
Precisely. The TRC report is comprehensive on war crimes suspects. It's a comprehensive list, numbering more than 100 persons. And Senator Prince Johnson is listed as one of the most notorious perpetrators of war crimes in that area. And subsequent investigations that the TRC authorized have also reviewed other people who may be indicted.
Councillor Jerome Verdier is the former chair of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. In Zimbabwe, the opposition movement for democratic change says it plans to install Nelson Chamisa as the legitimately elected president of the country following the disputed July 30th presidential poll, which the Electoral Commission said was won by President Emmerson Mnangagwa. MDCT presidential spokesman Nkululeko Sibanda says the swearing-in schedule for this Saturday will be conducted by Zimbabweans and not the country's chief justice or his deputy, who are supposed to administer the oath of office for a president as stipulated in the country's constitution.
Part of the inauguration of President Nelson Chamisa happened on the 30th of July, when he was elected overwhelmingly by 2.6 million people as the president of the country. And that continues until Saturday, when the party, the MDC, celebrates this milestone and achievement and puts it on the map that we know very well who is the legitimate president of the country, that we know very well who won the majority of the elections. The people of Zimbabwe know that. This will just be a confirmation and continuation.
And there are some critics who are saying that you are actually breaking the law. You can't install another president following the inauguration of President Mnangagwa.
The greatest sin against the constitution of this country is what President Mnangagwa has done, stealing this election in the first instance. He's also, as you have seen, continuously, habitually disrespects the constitution. Right now, he has appointed what he calls resident ministers in the province, the different provinces, when the constitution is very clear about devolution, that elected governments in the form of provincial councils, local councils, and so forth, are now going to be allowed to run their affairs. To appoint these ministers is, in fact, to go against the constitution. And that is what is illegal here. We do not need a minister of local government, because local government is now devolved from central government.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the presidential spokesperson of the opposition MDC led by Nelson Chamisa. He spoke with reporter Gabe Dube of the Zimbabwe service. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with a wrap of match day two results from the CAF 2019 African Cup of Nations qualifiers this past weekend. In Antananarivo, it was an unfortunate scenario as at least one person was killed and 40 people were injured in a stampede at the Mahamasina Stadium, Antananarivo, on Sunday. The stampede occurred at the entrance to the venue just before kickoff between Madagascar and Senegal. A minute silence was observed before the match, in which the Barrier twice battled back to hold Senegal to a 2-2 draw. Liberia and the Democratic Republic of Congo played to a 1-1 draw in their Group G African Cup of Nations qualifier on Sunday at the Samuel Doe Sports Complex in Monrovia. Lone Star captain William Jabor struck from 18 yards in the 65th minute to score Liberia's only goal, while DRC equalized in the 83rd minute from substitute and TP Mazembe youngster Elia Meshak. Liberian captain Jabor spoke with Moses Garzewu about what it took to dominate a well-built DR Congo side.
We try to play them happy as possible, but as times go by, we lost a little concentration because the stamina dropped a little bit, but we need to work on it more and to improve the team. And like, we're building our team, so by the grace of God, I think next game will be better, you know, game after game. So I think Liberia have a chance. We can qualify. We just need to focus and go to the next game with a positive atmosphere, with the same mentality of winning, and we're going to win.
DR Congo, who were missing five of their key players, had England-based forward Benik Afobi from Stoke City leading their attack. Afobi told VOA Liberia gave them a match to remember.
Yeah, obviously we came here, we wanted the 3 points, but Liberia were much better than we expected. Very solid, they had a good game plan. But, you know, we think at the end of the day, the referees cost us, you know. I think I've gone through on goal, it should have been a red card, and we should have had a penalty. So we're a bit disappointed to not get two crucial decisions, but we'll go again and we'll play again in October against Zimbabwe.
Elsewhere, former Dutch star Clarence Seedorf made a disappointing debut as Cameroon coach as they were held 1-1 by Minos Comoros. The outcome could have been even worse for the 42-year-old ex-Real Madrid midfielder as the side fell behind after 15 minutes and levelled with only 10 minutes remaining. In Durban, South Africa, Libya frustrated Bafana Bafana to a goalless draw in their Group E Day 2 clash on Saturday at the Moses Mabhida Stadium. The Mediterranean Knights and Bafana Bafana are level now on 4 points each after two rounds of matches, but the North Africans are top of the group on goal difference. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. At least 19 people died Sunday in a plane crash in South Sudan. Four other people survived. The regional information minister for the Eastern Lake State, Taban Abel Aguek, said the plane crashed in the central town of Uwerl as it came in to land. And that's it for this Monday, September 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Botte in Washington wishing you a good day.
Hello, I'm Lenore Moudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will take a look at the ongoing Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Our guest is Dr. Malonga Myatudila, senior public health specialist and one of the doctors who first discovered the Ebola virus in the DRC in 1976. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.